sure did used to be a lot of constitutional crises.
Repeat after me.
The president is sworn to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution.
So help me God.
So help me God.
So help me God.
But conflicts of interest between Donald Trump's businesses and his presidency could spark a constitutional crisis.
That was CNN Business. This is MSNBC.
This week, Vice President Mike Pence spent two nights at one of President Donald Trump's golf resorts in Doonbeg, Ireland. Pence's chief of staff said that he thought the stay was at the president's suggestion. Then Trump denied having any part in the decision. But this is rekindling a long-time debate about whether Trump is violating the Constitution's...
Yeah, a lot of constitutional crises. They seem to be popping up all the time. In fact, I could just do this. I could go to This Week. They had a special on this.
Now to our weekly insider, an interview with a newsmaker with an inside track on a major news story. This week, Donald Trump's assault on law and order. As Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller's Trump-Russia investigation gets closer to the president himself, Trump appears to be doing everything in his power to fire Mueller. We've seen this before. During Watergate.
A constitutional crisis like Watergate. That's from CBC News in Canada. Man, it used to just happen all the time. Good thing that's over. Mike Lee, Senator Mike Lee from the state of Utah, who Mitt Romney tried to get fired, had a question recently. In fact, it was just this weekend. Why did the Director of National Intelligence tell every member of the Senate Intel Committee, Democrats and Republicans alike, that they could not be briefed, even in a classified setting, on the classified documents at issue in the Biden and Trump investigations? So a bureaucrat says to the proper committee to look at such things in the United States Senate, no. No, you can't. Good thing we're done with all those constitutional crises. Thank you to Texas Superfood for jumping onto the team. Can't wait to talk about these guys tomorrow.
The Todd Herman Show is 100% disapproved by big pharma, technocrats, and tyrants everywhere. Now, from the high mountains of free America, here's the Emerald City Exile, Todd Herman.
Today is the day the Lord has made, and these are the times through which God has decided we shall live. Yeah, lots of constitutional crises. Coming up later in the show, my friend Mike O'Rourke, retired Special Forces. Want to talk about constitutional crises? He's looking at Antifa and how well organized they are and what exactly they're doing in Atlanta. And how that was the last thing from just a protest that sprung up. Oh, and by the way, are you getting doxxed by Antifa? If you're a business executive or you are married to a business executive or you're a cop, you're probably in Antifa files, including your home address. Michael Rourke would join us. There were all these constitutional crises. This is back to the CBC.
1973.
The country tonight is in the midst of what may be the most serious constitutional crisis in its history. Half an hour after the special Watergate prosecutor had been fired, agents of the FBI, acting at the direction of the White House, sealed off the offices of the special prosecutor, the offices of the attorney general, and the offices of the deputy attorney general. All of this adds up to a totally unprecedented situation.
Unprecedented, and it was. Watergate was unprecedented. And back to CNN, talking about President Trump owning some businesses.
How? President Trump could run afoul of an obscure section of the Constitution, the Emoluments Clause.
That's been in there ever since the founding of the country.
Richard Painter, hardcore leftist.
A very serious constitutional crisis if there were to be an accusation.
It bars government officials from accepting payments and gifts of any kind from any king, prince, or foreign state.
Or like, you know, through their son, Hunter, and through his businesses and their entanglements with the Chinese Communist Party. Or, you know, gifts, as long as it's later. As long as it's later on, you know, like Barack Hussein Obama, God bless Rush, he waited to get his billions until after he'd left the office. Or, you know, putting their family members and cousins and brothers, et cetera, on boards and committees. And or, you know, inside trading deals like Nancy Pelosi's become a billionaire with. You know, things like that. That's forbidden. Don't you know? Absolutely rock solid. Forbidden. And there it was. Those were some of the constitutional crises. But not all of them. They just continued to pop up. It's like we couldn't get enough of the constitutional crises. This is Dick Durbin going on CNN to talk about another constitutional
crisis. Senator
Durbin,
thanks for joining us. President Trump says the Nunes memo totally vindicates Trump in the probe. Does it?
No, of course it does not. And the fact that the Republicans in the House refused to allow a minority report, the Democratic response to their memo, is an indication that they're just bound and determined to continue to find ways to absolve this president from any responsibility. I agree completely with John McCain. It was John McCain who said trying to undermine the FBI and the Department of Justice is really not in the best interests of America. And frankly, it's doing Putin's work. We ought to be trying to focus on an investigation at a professional level by Bob Mueller and not trying to find a way to obstruct justice or to absolve this president from any responsibility he has.
And he went on to say the phrase, constitutional crisis, but I cannot continue to listen to the lies. Oh, just one more. This was recent, January 6th, a law professor.
I believe that had Vice President Pence obeyed the orders from his president and the president of the United States of America during the joint session of the Congress of the United States on January 6, 2021, and declared Donald Trump the next president of the United States, notwithstanding that then President Trump had lost the Electoral College vote as well as the popular vote in the 2020 presidential election. That declaration of Donald Trump as the next president would have plunged America into what I believe would have been tantamount to a revolution within a constitutional crisis.
Interesting. A revolution within a constitutional crisis. Of course, the election was straight up and down. No question about that. It was the most safest and secure election in history. We know that because that's what the lawyer from Microsoft said. Even before they did an investigation. And now we know, of course, there was really no investigation. Bill Barr didn't actually investigate. So what about this Mike Lee discussion? That's not a constitutional crisis, is it? That's not a revolution within a constitutional crisis, is it? My goodness, that would be very, very serious. This weekend, I went swimming. And if there's one downside to losing a bunch of fat, it is you don't float as well. I'll just tell you that. It's a weird phenomenon. My swimming has gotten worse. Now, granted, this is the second time I've been swimming in a year and a half. Yeah, soaking in the lake or soaking in the river, it's, you know, when it's 36 degrees or 34 degrees, no, we don't swim. That would be suicidal. But because of the shoulder injury, I haven't swum. So that's the only downside I can offer for having lost a bunch of weight. Now, I talk so much about physical activity because it's something I do. And it's something, the older I get, the more meaningful it is for me and the more enjoyable it is for me. But aside from swimming, I invite you to familiarize me with the advantage of carrying, like I did, 150 pounds of fat on your body. I could maybe offer another one is that it was harder for me to get cold, but it was also incredibly uncomfortable in 70 or 75 degree weather. It was uncomfortable sleeping. It was uncomfortable sitting. It was uncomfortable driving. It was uncomfortable in movement. It was uncomfortable putting clothes on. For gosh sake, it was uncomfortable being unclothed. It was uncomfortable. It didn't mean, and I never did, thank God. My dad tied it to his worth as a human being, and God protected me against that. I never thought of myself as a worse human because I had a bunch of extra body fat. I hope you haven't fallen into that trap. I pray you've not. I pray it. If that's the case, please take care of the mental picture before you take care of the physical picture, please. But it was uncomfortable. And here's the crazy thing is, you don't really know how uncomfortable it is until you don't have to do it anymore. I don't have to squeeze into airplane seats on the rare occasion that I have to fly. I don't have to squeeze into theater seats. I don't have to squeeze into booths at restaurants. I don't have to go to a special place to shop for clothes. I can walk into a store and buy things. I can buy stuff online and be relatively certain they're going to fit. My shoe size is smaller. That's freaky. My shoe size is smaller. I don't snore. I can taste food better. My olfactory senses are much, much better. I don't get the headaches I used to get. I don't have the sleeplessness I used to have. It just doesn't stop. The benefits are yours to have, but it involves taking action. Okay. If you've not gotten in touch with SotaWeightLoss.com SOTAweightLoss.com, I'm going to guess a couple of things. One, you're embarrassed. Dear ones, they see people all the time. Most of them have lost weight with the program. Most of the people at Soda. They're actual patient-centered providers of health. You might think it's not something that can be fixed. You're too old. Again, friends, I'm telling you, you can take 2.5 to 5 pounds a week off your body and do it in a slow, meticulous way that is designed to last. The other thing would be cost. Well, attach a dollar amount to your health, right? That's a tough equation because of what the fat does to your body. Please get with Soda Weight Loss. They're at SOTAweightLoss.com. 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 Coming up, you want a crisis? How about a terrorist group that is well-funded, that is well-maintained, and that is orderly and very, very organized? Talk to my friend, Michael Rourke. By the way, I caught him on a cell phone because I wanted to get his input on this. He's been watching Antifa because it's one of the things at AOC Security that they watch. So if we want to talk about a real crisis, we'll get to that in just a second. Jill Biden was asked. Well, actually, the figurehead was asked if they would allow a search of one of their other many homes. Reporter said, will you allow the FBI to search your Rehoboth Beach home?
Mr. President, will you allow the FBI to search your Rehoboth Beach home? You heard that, Biden?
Hello. And that's Jill Biden.
McCarthy next week. McCarthy.
That was Jill Biden actually brought her body in between the reporter and the figurehead. She walked in front, put her hands up like it was a volleyball game, to stop the figurehead from answering the question and to stop the reporter from continuing to ask. So what about Senator Mike Lee? Let's think about that statement the law professor made. He was talking about a revolution within a constitutional crisis. Okay. Let's go back to the full statement from Senator Mike Lee and let's do this in a more complete way. Why did the Director of National Intelligence tell every member of the Senate Intel Committee, that's Democrats and Republicans alike, that they could not be briefed, even in a classified setting, on the classified documents at issue in the Trump and Biden investigations? Mike Lee continues. Members of the Senate Intel Committee constantly review the most sensitive classified information regarding our national security. It's their job to review such matters, and yet the Director of National Security said no. Why? Apparently, the DNI is blocking the release of key details of the documents until the Department of Justice concludes its investigations. So let's look deeper into that. The Department of Justice has already said to the Republicans they will not be turning over any of the investigative materials on Jan 6th. They're not going to turn over any of it. They refuse. So we have in our tricameral body politics, our tricameral government, the checks and balances, the judicial, the executive, and the legislative. Then you have on these add-ons, these bureaucracies that are staffed by the executive but funded by the Congress of the United States and restrained in their activity by the Senate. Congress holds the money. The Senate can decide on how they interact internationally, etc. The executive staffs them. So it is tricameral. But the legislative branch is unquestionably a greater branch, a more important branch, a branch with more authority than any bureaucracy could ever have. So the Department of Justice isn't done reviewing the documents, meaning they're not done cleansing them, meaning they're not done controlling them. Mike Lee continues in his statement. He had said the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, is blocking key details of the documents until the Department of Justice concludes its investigations. He's quoting the Washington Times. Mike Lee says that's indefensible. Lee continues, by the way, he said this all on Twitter. Senator Mark Warner, a Democrat from Virginia, the committee's chairman, said Democrats and Republicans on the committee were unanimous in the position that we're left in limbo until somehow a special counsel designates that it's okay for us to get briefed. This is not going to stand. That's a Democrat saying this is not going to stand. This is a constitutional crisis. This is a bureaucratic branch refusing to follow the directions of the elected representatives, the people's branch. This is a branch subservient to the elected officials, refusing to respond to or to provide them information to which they are constitutionally provisioned to, you know, they're constitutionally provisioned to see. Back to Mike Lee. Mr. Warner, again, Warner's a Democrat. Mr. Warner's frustrations were echoed by Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, the top Republican on the committee. He said the administration's stonewalling impeded the committee's ability to do its job of providing oversight of the Intelligence Committee. Exactly. How many times do we have to say this? It's official, guys. We do not live in a constitutional republic. The FBI has told the Senate and the House to pound sand. We're not going to tell you if we had agitators and agents inside Jan 6. We're not going to tell you who decided to open the Capitol doors. We're not going to tell you why we decided to allow that the riots to continue. We're not going to tell you these things. We can't because there's an ongoing investigation. We're not going to tell you in private. We're not going to do what you say. Now, what were those constitutional crises we were hearing about? Wasn't there some concern about the constitutional crisis of, what's a good one? Yeah, the one that's worse than Watergate. That was from CBC News. We had the lawyer, the law professor, the president in Mike Pence and that thing. And that could have been a real crisis. Right. And maybe it was a crisis. Maybe the revolution happened. Maybe the election was not on the up and up. I know it was rigged and I sense it was stolen. So, which is more disconcerting? A debate in public? The Mockingbird media saying this is a constitutional crisis and us getting to go, no, the emoluments clause is not a constitutional crisis. And no, there's no limit on gifts. They all get gifts. They all leave office billionaires. Every single one of them does. Trump's the only one who lost net worth while he was in the presidency. No, the Devin Nunes memo was not a constitutional crisis. It turned out that Nunes was exactly right about what was going on. But when the deep state, and that's what the Director of National Intelligence is, the deep state says we simply refuse to follow the commands of the elected body, that is a constitutional crisis. And what about that revolution part? Who's running things? We know it's not the figurehead. Who's been running things for the past 2.5 years? We know it's not the figurehead. Who ran the lockdowns? The revolution, guys, it's going on now, and it may well be a fait accompli. Back to Mike Lee's statement. We simply want to, oh, this is Marco Rubio, pardon me. This is Mike Lee quoting Marco Rubio. We simply want to know what was this information. What were these materials that they had? So that we can make an honest assessment when they provide us a risk assessment of whether or not they've taken the proper mitigation if it was necessary. Yeah, it's an oversight role. They're the bosses. They are overseeing, and the employees are saying, no, we're not going to tell you. Back to Marco Rubio through Mike Lee. And to say they're not going to share with us as long as the special counsel doesn't allow them to share it with us, that's an untenable position, and it won't stand. So Marco Rubio says it won't stand. Clearly, he's a Republican. And the Virginia Democrat Warner says it won't stand. Mike Lee. Apparently, the private non-government lawyers, okay, get this. Apparently, the private, that is non-government lawyers, so let's break that down. Apparently, the lawyers whom the figurehead is using money from China and Ukraine and the Chinese Communist Party and God knows who else, the lawyers being paid by that money have been given full access to these documents. So the United States Senate, the proper committee, the Intel Committee, doesn't get to see them. They all have security clearances. Mike Lee asks, do these lawyers have security clearance? Even if they do, there's no way they have higher levels of clearance than the Senate Intelligence Committee. Constitutional crisis wrapped up in, a revolution wrapped up in a constitutional crisis. The members of the Senate Intel Committee, Democrats and Republicans, need to access these documents. Probably need access to them. It's highly suspicious that the DNI is denying them access, even while the lawyers representing POTUS have unfettered access. My friends on the Senate Intel Committee, Democrats and Republicans, work constantly with the Intelligence Committee personnel, with whom they've always had a great rapport. I don't ever recall seeing them in more united in their frustration with the Director of National Intelligence. They are ticked. And by the way, ticked is a big word for Mike Lee. And with that reason, there's something seriously, seriously wrong here. Mike Lee's exactly right. But the constitutional crisis when Mike Pence stayed in a hotel room, I mean, right there, that's got to be the most chilling of all things that have ever happened
in this
country.
Well, this week, Vice President Mike Pence spent 2 nights at one of President Donald Trump's golf resorts in Doonbeg, Ireland. Pence's chief of staff said that he thought the stay was at the president's suggestion. Then Trump denied having any part in the decision. But this is rekindling a long-time debate about whether Trump is violating the Constitution's emoluments clauses. In this case, taxpayers were footing the bill for Pence staying at Trump's hotel, even though it was more than an hour flight from Dublin, where the VP had his meetings. And so, of course, it makes sense for us to bring in Danny Savalas with the legal perspective. Danny, what does the Constitution say? And it almost seems silly that we're talking about hotel stays in relation to the Constitution, but what does the Constitution say about this?
The framers of the Constitution were almost obsessed with the notion of corruption. They wanted to avoid it at all costs. Look no further than the impeachment clause, that the two mentioned exemplary impeachable offenses are not murder, they're not crimes of violence, they're not even really crimes of theft. They are crimes of corruption, treason and bribery.
And in the figurehead's circle, and the people still there, is a general who decided to warn the Chinese Communist Party to tell them, hey, don't worry, if the president of the United States makes a decision to take any military action, I will tell you back channel-like. I will warn the declared enemy of the United States of America that we are coming. But yes. Hotel rooms, constitutional crisis. It couldn't have been worse. Good thing there's no more hotel rooms. The roughgreens.com offer to send you a starter kit. It's a trial bag. right? Here's what this means. It means they're putting their money on the line. Yep, you do cover the shipping. You do that. But they're going to take the product. They're going to process it. They're going to send it to you. And they're saying, try it. So to me, that conveys a whole lot of confidence. And having spent some time with Dr. Dennis Black, who founded the company, I always ask the why. That is the first question I ask anybody we're going to work with. I ask this most senior executive, in this case, the guy who runs the company, Dr. Dennis Black. I said, why do you do this? And he told me a story. And it's his story. So he was an Army Ranger and a Green Beret and a helicopter pilot. And he went to see a doctor because he was feeling horrible. And the doctor said, you have cancer and you have about 6 months to live. And I thought, you know, I know enough of these guys to think that probably the thing you don't say to an Army Ranger dash Green Beret and helicopter pilot is, here's what I have decided for you. So Dennis Black decided to beat cancer. And we're going to have him on the show to talk about this. He did volumes of research on all sorts of alternative treatments and came out with a whole series of things. Sleep was one of them. Prayer is another. Nutrition was the biggest one. So he designed a product, and I'm going to be taking this product. I don't have cancer. Thank God I don't. But after he made that product and it was very successful, people asked him, what about our dogs? So he started to look into dogs, and he'd made himself a naturopathic doctor. So he went and did the work, went to school. He's a naturopathic MD. He reached out to a naturopathic veterinarian and said, hey, here's the product I've created for human beings. Would this work for dogs? The veterinarian said, oh, goodness, no. Oh, gosh, no. No, no, dogs are very different. No. You need to change all the formulations. Now, some of the ingredients are absolutely spot on for dogs because dogs need vitamins and minerals, and they need probiotics and digestive enzymes and omega-3, 6, and 9. They need antioxidants. They cannot get that from dog food. It's dead food. So Dr. Dennis Black teamed up with a naturopathic veterinarian, and we have Rough Greens. That's what it is. Incidentally, I will drink if you want me to. I've seen Dr. Black do it. I'll be happy to drink Rough Greens. I put it on my dog's food in the morning, sprinkle it on. My dog now doesn't even notice it's there. Here's the thing I notice about her. She smells better. Her coat is better. She does. Her breath doesn't stink. Her teeth look better. And again, I don't know. All of a sudden, I started talking about regularity on the show. I walk her. I know things about the dog's regularity. It has vastly improved. Go to roughgreens.com/Todd. Take them up on their offer. The trial kit. They'll send you a free bag. You just cover shipping. Roughgreens.com/Todd. So we sit and we watch. The CDC seized housing. They seized your house. During the lockdown, the installation of the Great Reset, a guy whose job function includes the word allergy, Tony Fauci, decided you don't get to charge people rent. You don't get to go to school. You don't get to continue to work unless you get injected. That's a bureaucrat. Other bureaucrats have decided there's things you don't get to say on Twitter. If you don't speak on Twitter, there's things you don't get to see on Twitter. This week, someone made the decision that we don't get to look at the full video in the beating death of Tyre Nichols. I had it. I had the 7.5-minute version, and then it was gone. I don't get to have it anymore. I failed to grab a copy. I've got the audio. Someone made the decision earlier this week that needs to be stricken from YouTube. Oh, pardon me, the James O'Keefe video needs to be stricken from YouTube. Someone at the Mail Online in Britain decided, oh, you know that story we spent time writing about the James O'Keefe story about Pfizer? Delete it and don't say anything. Just hide it. We know that deep staters are doing this. We have the proof. So from hotel rooms and you could have this discussion about the Mike Pence and Trump thing. That's a very serious issue. And that's worthy of constitutional crises discussion. You know what else is? Stealing an election. That's a constitutional crisis. That's worthy of that. Hotel rooms are not. A Devin Nunes memo is not. None of those things were a constitutional crisis. These all are. And it all points back to people who absolutely don't know what their lane is. Their lane is to serve. Find me the people who seek to serve. Find me a problem in our government that would not be served by hiring people who seek to serve and not be served. But all of this goes back to something we talked about yesterday. This may well be the soundbite of the decade because it says so much. It says so much about what has happened to honor in government. It says so much about constitutional crises in an era where someday these cases might have to go before this lady from the separate country of Washington. And yes, I'm going to play it one more time. Senator Kennedy questioning a judge. Before I play this again, let me ask you a question if you're a truck driver. Ready? How long are you allowed to drive nonstop without breaking federal law? Got it? Let me ask you another question. You are a lawyer. Are you allowed ethically to have sex with a client? Let me ask another question. The military. Are you allowed to go in full dress uniform and state your political opinion against the president of the United States? One more question. I'm trying to think of another profession that I can pretend to know something about. Oh, in radio. Is it a good thing to talk about the temperature of the studio and what you had for breakfast, or should you get straight to the content? These are all the contours of a job. These are all the basics of a job. Anybody who is even basic in this job would know things. CrossFit coach. You're doing a CrossFit 101 with someone. They're coming in for the first time. They've never been at a CrossFit gym. What's the first thing you say to them? You greet them by name. Hardest thing anyone ever does walking to the gym. First thing you do is you know they're coming. You have them under schedule. You're at the door. You greet them by name. You shake their hand and you walk with them in so they don't have to walk in alone. What's the second thing you do? You do an injury mitigation. So as you start to move and you start to stretch and you start to talk and get to know one another and try to make a human connection with the person, you're looking at the way they move to see, hey, you know what? This person probably shouldn't do a lot of hinging. We call it hip hinging until we figure out how and why it's a problem for them. So listen to this lady and understand, we're talking here about the contours of her job. We're talking here about the basic knowledge. You work at a gas station. So you own a gas station. Do you put diesel in a car that takes unleaded? Do you put unleaded in a diesel car? No. Is there a safe amount to fill up the tires? Or should you just fill them up as far as you can until they pop? Is there an answer to that? Do you sell beer in your state to people who are under 21?
Judge, on the far end, tell me what Article 5 of the Constitution does.
Article 5 is not coming to mind at the moment.
Okay. How about Article 2?
Neither is Article 2.
Okay. Do you know what purposivism is?
In my 12 years as an assistant attorney general, and my 9 years serving as a judge, I was not faced with that precise question. We are the highest trial court in Washington state, so I'm frequently faced with issues that I'm not familiar with, and I thoroughly review the law, our research, and apply the law to the facts presented to me.
I open books. I memorize things. I have no real knowledge of the law whatsoever. By the way, Article 5 of the Constitution, it deals with how the Constitution can be amended. That seems to be a legitimately serious topic. Purposivism, and I had to look that up. The purposive approach is an approach to statutory and constitutional interpretation under which common law courts interpret an enactment within the context of the law's purpose. Another way to say it, a theory of statutory interpretation whereby courts strive to interpret statutory provisions in accordance with the statute's purpose. In other words, they try to tie the purpose to the meaning. In your line of work, If I were to come to you, for instance, and say, when do you use a butterfly bolt? And if I were to use, say, for instance, a chainsaw, are there some safety methodologies I should use for the chainsaw? Is it a good idea if I'm cutting through a log to let my chainsaw go into the dirt? If not, why? If I'm felling a tree, is there anything special I should know about a means of escape? Should I have a primary and secondary means of escape? If I have to rescue someone in water and they're panicking, is there an approach I should take rather than swimming to them in front? Do you ever have to knock a person out or render them incapable of hitting you when you're trying to rescue a person in the water? All these questions are the contours of a job. When you're doing physical therapy with someone and the joints you're working on seems to be, it seems to be resisting movement, at what point do you put your entire body weight, let's say, on top of someone's elbow and just crank it back? These are the contours of her job, and she doesn't know these things. How do we end up in a constitutional crisis? It goes right back to the theory of the show, one of the main theories of the show. On top, we have evil, scheming people who know exactly what they're doing. On bottom, you have functionaries like that lady. She has no legitimate knowledge of the law, no legitimate knowledge of the Constitution. She is a person who memorizes things for tests, regurgitates them back, doesn't really internalize what they mean because I don't think it's meaningful to her. That's why she can't sit there and say and provide any form of proper answer. In the middle of that is America. In the middle of that are the loggers, are the teachers, are the physical therapists, are the CrossFit coaches and the accountants. That's us. We're stuck in the middle between evil, scheming people on top and functionaries on the bottom who are given, more and more often, given jobs because of the color of their skin. And there is, that's the political component, one of the political components to the Cultural Revolution. There is another political component to the Cultural Revolution, and that we're going to talk about with my friend Michael Rourke. Mike is retired Special Forces, and he has been tracking Antifa specifically around these latest riots. He'll join us in just a second. Hey, are you being doxxed by them? Oh, I thought you might want to know. We talk so much on this show about parallel economies. I don't know why this didn't occur to me before. MyPillow is the parallel economy. One dude decided to start a pillow company because, and in his case, it came with God's intervention in his life. And God said, you have been the source of countless sleepless nights for the people who love you because you have become a drug addict and a gambling addict and an alcoholic. And so one guy decides, I'm going to start a pill company. That's as parallel as it gets. Now, of course, he could have gone the Sam Walton way. And he could have said, okay, I want more and more and more margin. So I'm going to continue to push down on suppliers and move things over to China and buy everything over there. That's why I call it Walmart China Mart. And Lindell didn't do that. Nope, I'm going to keep it in small town America where I had all my problems and hire people who I probably used to be a problem for. So when I talk about the company, that's the company. When I talk about the products, of course, it has to come off in the product. The Giza Dream Sheets, you can right now get these as low as $29.98. And these are grown only, the cotton for this grows grown only between the Sahara Desert, the Mediterranean Sea, and the Nile River. So it's a long time staple cotton that's hard to get. This is why they're so ultra soft and breathable. And I still say we need to invent a word for they keep their coolness. Come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a one-year limited warranty. Shop the New Year's specials, still going on, New Year's specials at MyPillow.com. Use promo code Todd to get huge discounts on all MyPillow bedding products, including the blankets, pillows, and comforters. Get the Giza Dream Sheet bed sheets for as low as $29.98 while quantities last. Stock up now at MyPillow.com. Use promo code Todd for the New Year's specials. MyPillow.com, promo code Todd. Sorry, Mike, for not recognizing you kind of helped think up this whole parallel economy thing. So are you being doxxed by Antifa? If you're a cop or a corporate executive, you might well be. I know someone who knows a lot more about this stuff than I do and a lot more about defending our country and defending your security, so decided to have him back on the program. Joining me now, my friend Michael Rourke. He is boss man at AOC Security, retired Special Forces. Joins us on the Todd Herman Show. Mike, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd. Seems like we're always getting together to talk about the bad things in the world.
Well, one day we'll have to get on and talk about the good things in the world. And you know, I've been thinking about having a show with you guys and doing a week where we talk about the good parts of, you know, service and what you guys saw and did and do after that. So that's a good reminder of that. You found yourself, because of what you do, AOC Security, you help companies protect themselves and high net worth individuals protect themselves. And so you keep tabs on Antifa, and you secured your computers and protected yourself and went in and looked prior to the Atlanta riots, et cetera, that went on. And what did you learn?
I learned that they're pretty well organized. They've been protesting this Atlanta Public Safety Center construction project for probably around a year now. And so they're very well organized. They call the protester who was killed essentially a martyr. They have, even though he opened fire on police first and wounded an officer before the police defended themselves and killed him. So he's a martyr. They're rallying around, you know, his name. They have a big shrine out there in the forest to him. And they have a they have their own target list, these protesters do.
And so they have an expressed target list.
Yeah, they absolutely do. It's a there's one website that lists home addresses of multiple police officers. They have all their Facebook accounts listed. And the target list includes groups like, you know, things like Chick-fil-A, Home Depot, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and then multiple companies that are actually involved in the construction project. And on a couple of these companies, they have the home addresses of the senior executives listed on their website.
And when you say targets, what do you think that means? That they would go and it's not going to be sending flowers.
No, I mean, of course, on the website, they don't, in most cases, they're not talking explicitly about violence, but given the history of these organizations, I consider these, especially with the, when people have their home addresses listed, I consider these credible threats.
Yeah. pardon me. I would too. And when you look at this stuff, Mike, with your backgrounds and, you know, what special forces people do, prepping environments and clearing battlefields, et cetera. When you say these guys are well organized, that means something to me. I mean, I know you're not complimenting them for who they are, but when you look at this through a special forces lens, I mean, this is a command and control. We're told this is just a Antifa is just an idea, but you're describing a command and control structure.
Yeah, it's certainly more than an idea. I mean, you know, the Antifa philosophy is kind of based on anarchist and communist ideology, and they follow what they call leaderless resistance. So you won't necessarily find like one CEO of Antifa, but you'll have multiple autonomous or semi-autonomous organizations, and it can be, you know, an organization can be one person, it could be 100. You know, they're pretty good at keeping their numbers hidden, but they follow a philosophy, basically communist ideology in a lot of respects. And they followed the structure of an insurgency as we studied during the Special Forces qualification course, you know, long, long time ago, the structure of an insurgency and its main components. I think they're all there with the Antifa and related organizations.
So can we run through that? I mean, you and I have talked from time to time about Mao's rules and I guess phases and rules for insurrections. And one point unveiled me of a book of that. And I was just looking at their political structure as Maoist. And then I think this was back in the days when they were allowing Antifa to run six blocks of Seattle that I think you said, hey, you might be more onto this than you think. This is a Maoist insurrection structure. So can we run through those, what you talk about with these insurgencies and how they view that and what those phases are?
Yeah, let's define a couple terms first. Insurgency is the organized use of subversion and violence to seize, nullify, or challenge political control of a region. An insurgency can also refer to the group itself. Next important term is resistance movement. And that's an organized effort by some portion of the civil population of a country to resist the legally established government or an occupying power, and to disrupt civil order and stability. And both of those definitions come from the United States Army Special Operations Command.
And that describes Antifa to a T.
Yes, sir. I would think so.
And then with, you'll go ahead. No, you finish your thought, then we'll move on to Mao.
Oh, I was going to say just, you got three main components or four main components of a resistance movement. That's the underground, the auxiliary, the guerrilla force, and the public component. And throughout the whole hardcore violent left ideology, I think all those elements are present.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of one that's not. I mean, I think their presence all the way up into government and, clearing the path for people like this that, I mean, we know that the so-called Attorney General of Minnesota was, happy to get his picture taken with the Antifa guidebook. And he thought that was plenty cool. Then there's Mao in Faces of Insurrections. And that was what was so alarming, I think, to you and I when Antifa was allowed to seize six blocks of Seattle, is they took a really, really important step. Because is it step three that comes with seizing a government property, government territory? Is that step three of Mao's Faces of Insurrections?
Yeah, that's the kind of the conventional open warfare phase. The three phases are political, guerrilla warfare, and then conventional war, or, and going more into the overt realm. And with Mao's philosophy, you can move seamlessly between all three, and you can have elements of all three happening at the same time. But the more power you get, the more it goes from more of a guerrilla type style to a conventional open war. And when you see in the, what we call this, the guerrillas, pipe swingers out in the streets, that's still more on the guerrilla phase. But yeah, when you get more conventional, when you start seizing territory.
Okay, so when these guys go in there, they're seizing this forest and in an attempt to stop this police training center from being built. That's right out of Mao, that they intend to have a political and a public relations fight over this, but clearly they're prepared to have a physical fight. And is part of this that they want other people to jump in and join the physical fight, that they're looking to show force and show that, hey, we can do this, and therefore recruit other like ill-adjusted people to come in and join?
That's certainly part of it. They do call their encampment in the forest an autonomous zone, similar to what happened in Seattle on a much smaller scale. But if you go on some of the websites and look at their solidarity statement and the number of groups and individuals that have signed on in solidarity, it's over 1,200 groups and individuals. I think I've got it on paper in three columns, and it's still 23 pages long.
Wow. And let's remember this, that the some of the principles of Black Lives Matter Incorporated went to train with the PLO, and they went to PLO territory. Because, of course, they have this shared struggle. And that was detailed in Ebony magazine, that really they thought that was great. You mentioned this target list. If I was a corporate executive, I think I'd want to know if I was if I was on this list. And if I worked for one of these companies, or if I was a cop or law enforcement, I think I'd want to know which of my cops are on that list. And if I was a police officer, I'd want to know that I'd been doxxed by Antifa. Is this something that, do you get people, do companies, do they know enough yet to even ask you about this stuff, Mike?
I'm not sure. I've reached out to a couple of the companies yesterday, and I'm hoping to hear back soon, letting them know, hey, you guys are on a website, your CEO's home address is listed. And I'm sure that Atlanta police is probably well aware that their folks are being doxxed and that they're on the website. But yeah, the executives, I think they need to know this. The companies need to know this. One of the companies involved with the construction, they have offices all over the United States, and several of those offices have already been attacked. Damage has been caused, and then they brag about it on the website. They show pictures of the damage caused to the, to the windows and the spray paint on there. So a lot of these companies are, definitely understand that there's something going on and they're being targeted. They just, hopefully they know what to do about it. And if they don't, that's, we can come in and help.
Yeah. And I would think that on the West Coast, well, I know on the West Coast, there's Antifa serving you coffee. There's Antifa washing your car. We know that there's Antifa, you know, in the separate country of Oregon, the speaker's office there, her legislative aide was Antifa. She was arrested at riots. Andy Ngo has that background. We know that that went up into the governor's office. So I think if you're a West Coast-based company or in any area where Antifa is active, I think you'd also want to figure out if your employees are Antifa.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing about a guerrilla organization is that they blend seamlessly into the population. Yeah, Andy Ngo has done some fantastic work. I think I had his book on pre-order and got it as soon as it was available. It's a great read. Another group that either a person or group that's on Twitter is Antifa Watch. And they also have a website, antifawatch.org. It has a lot of information. They're identifying as many individuals as they possibly can.
Yeah. And that's the thing about, I think Andy Ngo's book is Antifa Unmasked. And I think that's what we need to do with this group, because while they're allowed to operate in the shadows, that's plenty dangerous. And Mike, companies can reach out to you to get help if they're on this list. And what about cops? Would you help a cop if you know, just law enforcement said, hey, am I on this list? Would you just tell cops?
Yes, absolutely. If anyone in law enforcement or in the private sector wants to reach out, they can get a hold of us at our website, Advanced Operational Concepts. The website is at opcon.com, or they can email AOC_security@opcon.com.
Yep.
And yeah, I need people like police and everything. They need to understand principles of counter surveillance, being able to detect when they're under hostile surveillance. Antifa groups are, you know, individuals are going to using public records to find people's home addresses. They're looking up information on police officers, on executives, on companies writ large, and they're trying to drive a wedge between individuals, these companies, and the projects they're working on.
Yeah, and then I remember this as well. In Portland and in Seattle, they'd gone so far as they had facial recognition. They had photos of cops. They had their off-duty cars. They had their on-duty cars. They were able to use photo recognition, facial recognition of crowd shots to determine when someone was an undercover cop. I mean, that was the most advanced. I mean, the seizing of Seattle, or the six blocks of Seattle, that was a very, very advanced operation with supply chain logistics. They had drone support. And they had drone overflies. So there was a time when it was okay to make fun of these guys as soy boys, and one-on-one or even three-on-one, there's still not much of a concern in an open-handed fight situation. But it's never just three-on-one anymore, and all of them are armed, it seems, these days. And they're recruiting felons and mentally ill people, and that's all very much on purpose. And that goes back to that report, Mike. I know you've read this. I have this great report from a Rutgers University affiliated group of academics who wrote a report called Network Enabled Anarchy. And that puts the lie to the idea that Antifa is an idea, where they actually said these guys use the same recruiting method as ISIS and Hamas. And so all the mentally ill people in Antifa, that's not a mistake. And I don't think Mao shied away from using deeply ill people to get his ends, right?
No, of course not. That's a feature, not a bug in the whole system. If you see anything called like a mutual aid group or society, that's often one of their, often can be seen as an Antifa node, a critical node in their organizational structure. Mm-hmm. They use a lot of left-wing bookstores as meeting places and recruitment centers, ways to indoctrinate individual radicalized people. And so there's definitely an organization to it. It's still, you know, it's kind of loose, but it can be unraveled. It can be identified.
Yeah. And it had better be unraveled and identified. You know, I worry about that sometimes with our daughter who's a vegan, you know, and they take groups like that, and they take in her case, she dearly, dearly loves animals, and she can't stand to think of them in pain. And there's a lot behind that. And it's really a difficult thing to be an observant vegan, and no one ever thinks their kid's going to get radicalized, right? But they prey upon those sort of single issue things, like kids who become gender defiant or gender confused, or kids who've come to believe that their same sex attraction issue is their identity. So I think Antifa is also they're well enough trained and well enough read. And I think, Mike, I think they're well enough guided to go target people like that based on those like really emotional single issues. Is that correct?
Absolutely. The if you look at their literature and when you first look at the websites, it's all fairly benign. We're defending the environment. The Atlanta forest issue is being couched in environmental terms in a lot of respects. And that's going to get a lot of interest there. Of course, you know, people want to protect the environment. And then anyone who wants to learn more, they can dive in deeper. They can get pulled in deeper and they can end up fully radicalized and being someone out there in the forest or in the streets.
Yeah. And this is also something that I think that, that I want parents and grandparents to understand that, like with the devil does not pop down in a big, you know, vast cloud of sulfur and announce himself as the most evil thing ever created, or well, mutated, because he wasn't created to be evil. He chose that, but ever mutated into evil. He doesn't do that. Likewise, these groups start very much with love and compassion, and it's by degrees that they radicalize people. And Mike, I know this requires supposition. I don't know that it's in Andy Ngo's book, but I fail to believe that these guys are not guided by outside forces. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, Mao came from a geopolitical region that might not mean us so the government of which doesn't mean us mean us well.
You've got to follow the money. You know, there's money going down to the individual level, getting people moved across the country. Money is flowing in from different organizations, and you have to start unraveling the finances in those organizations and then where those finances come from. It's a field called in the military and the government, it's called counter threat finance, the process of following the money, unraveling it, seeing where it comes from, and trying to find the ultimate source. It's a pretty complicated process, and it usually takes people that are trained in that process to really unravel it.
All right. And I assume you also can track money that way.
Yeah, you absolutely can.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised at, you know, ultimately if there is some foreign nexus involved in some of the financing.
Yeah. I mean, I would be disappointed in our adversaries if they weren't doing this. I mean, if this did arrive organically, I would be disappointed in the Chinese Communist Party as tacticians and strategists if they didn't go take advantage of this. I just happen to think that they are, you know, involved in fifth generation warfare against us. And I think they've got plenty of partners. So there's a link to Mike's work, his website and some of his writing in the show notes on the Substack. And if you're a company or a cop and or an agency, a police agency, and you want to know if Antifa has you guys doxed and figured out, or if you're a, you know, an executive, one of these companies, or a spouse of an executive, I encourage you to reach out to Mike and figure out if you're on that list. And Mike and I have no financial relationship, with just friends, but I just know he does great work. And we'll do that thing, Mike, where we get you guys on, you and a bunch of your colleagues who served our country, get on and we'll talk about the fun things related to the military. I bet there's a bunch.
There is quite a bit. I always get a little embarrassed when people thank me for my service, because that was probably the funnest 24 years of my life.
Well, then I'll stop doing it. No, I'll never stop doing it, but I'll say it this way. I'm glad you enjoyed your service, and thanks for that. All right. Appreciate you, my brother. I always want to tell you how much I appreciate you and what you're doing these days. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Todd. Always appreciate it.
Of course, Mike, I do wish that you would go with God's good wishes, and thank you so much for always. Sister, thank you again. God, stop it! You guys looking at me in video laughing at me. You know it's reflexive with me. I always thank you guys. This is the Todd Herman Show. Lord, thank you so much for men like Mike. Thank you so much for the protectors. Lord, thank you for logic and reason. This is the Todd Herman Show. Please, go be well, be strong, be kind.